Welcome back to the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. It's a rainy Thursday here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in the back of Roberta's. It's me, Heather Hallman here.
And Erin Fairbanks.
And we have the author of a new book that just was released, Primal Cuts, Cooking with America's Best Butchers, Marisa Gujana, in-house with us today. Welcome to the Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Marisa, thank you so much for coming. You were hustling here, right? Where are you coming from?
I just came from Martha Stewart Living Network.
Ooh.
It's very white and all the surfaces were clean.
Nice. I'm just going to paint the picture. The Heritage Radio Station is a little cozier than that. We do have a boar on the wall. It's feeling pretty snuggly in here.
Yeah.
And we are so happy to have you kind of launching your book tour. So let's kind of set the scene a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of where you're coming from and what your history is pre-fantastic book?
It's a long-sorted history, but...
Just give us the juicy bits.
Well, in 2005, I took a left turn from... I used to live in New York, actually, and I moved back to California, and I was a playwright, and my dad asked me to take over the family meat business, and so I started running that. And I got really into it, and I decided that if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it my way, which meant buying animals from local farmers. So I started sourcing meat and kicking the factory farm box beef out slowly, and so now that's what we do. We buy whole animals from local farmers, butcher them, either for them to sell at farmers markets or for us to sell wholesale. And eventually, my sort of writing itch came back, and so I started working as an editor and contributor at Meat Paper Magazine, and I write for some edible magazines and things like that, and started food writing, and then the idea for Primal Cuts came up, and it was like just heaven for me to travel around the country interviewing butchers.
And I know, I was like reading through the book, and I'm like, man, this girl stole my dream.
She didn't miss much. What was the tour like? How did you decide where you were going to go and who you were going to visit?
Some of the places were really apparent, and you know, especially working with meat paper and slow food and stuff, I'd had the chance to connect with a lot of people around the country around agriculture, and so I especially knew a lot of farmers. I was like, where does your meat go? Who, you know, where does it end up? I also, in places where I was less naturally connected, like the middle of the country.
Wisconsin, you found Scott Balzano there.
Yeah, Scott was amazing. I mean, I called edible magazine editors. I called slow food chapters. I talked to, you know, just smart foodie people that I knew. And then I would just call the people, and sometimes it was like, oh, dead end. You know, like we're not really working from the same set of principles here. But it was really easy to tell when I was like on the phone with someone who is, I consider my people. And then I took a few plane trips like to New Orleans and Texas, but then I rented a Prius. I flew to New York, I rented a Prius, and I just drove for 11,000 miles.
Wow.
Damn. Yeah, in like 4 months, and it was crazy.
That's awesome. Was it just you?
Mm-hmm. I was originally going to hire, a photographer for the book, and I was like, that's so awkward. Like, it's enough that I have to go meet these people and bond with them and get inside their world and to have another person there. And then to just be with someone for 11,000 miles, like I'd have to pick that person from the campus. I was like, I'm going to learn how to take pictures. So yeah. I did.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Well, there are some beautiful ones in the book. Definitely.
Yeah. So you visited, let's talk a little bit about the types of places you visited for people who haven't seen the book yet. So you were looking at retail shops, mm-hmm. restaurant butchers, mm-hmm. kind of what was the scope? And did that change kind of throughout?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, I was thinking all just old school butchers, and I was really just going to focus on the craft, the knife skills. But I realized that's not really where my heart is. Like, I wanted to tell the story of what's happening with meat and how it's moving from the farm to the table and how local food systems are being created and how, like, vital and important and necessary the butcher is to that. And so I just couldn't work with a bunch of 50 just old school guys. It had to be people in restaurants because a lot of the people that are buying whole animals and doing amazing charcuterie and all that stuff are in restaurants. And, you know, it had to be at funky little grocery stores and processing plants and butcher shops. So I hope that if you really look at everyone, then you get this sort of pastiche that tells a story about where the sustainable food movement is with meat now. So I picked very different kinds of people.
Yeah, that's what Heather and I were kind of wondering. You know, butchers have gotten a lot of attention, a lot of press. I mean, yeah. I think your book really speaks to this kind of growing interest. And it's very hot right now.
Yeah.
We didn't really have a sense, though, of whether this is a craft that is on the rise or on the decline, because I think the people who are getting a lot of the attention, my senses are kind of a small number. And then you have this old kind of grouping of, like you said, you know, 50, 60-year-old guys who've been cutting meat at the back of the IGA or the superfoods or whatever it is. Did you get a sense for, you know, where you think the profession is heading?
Well, the people in this book are a little tiny little percentage. They're a little niche, you know, as you guys know, the same with farmers who are selling their food directly. And, but they're growing. And I think the thing that's really important is to support their education. And a lot of these people taught themselves or learned really quickly so that they could get their vision on the, you know, happening.
Really quickly, like, the pork is here and it needs to be cut. That's how I learned. Okay, so here we go.
Or like, you know, Tom Mylan is, like, has this amazing shop, you know, and he was just, like, he learned at Fleischer's, but he didn't spend 20 years learning, you know, like a lot of guys do in Europe or, you know, 30 years ago. 40 years ago. And then he continued his education on his own. And I totally support that. You know, a lot of the old school guys are kind of like, well, they're not real butchers. These young guys that taught themselves, like, yeah, but they don't have the infrastructure to do that. So we're working with a different premise. And I just started a butcher's guild to kind of help support that. But
wow. How do you become involved?
You go to butchersguild.org.
Awesome. I mean, that's good. I mean, we're definitely looking to get more people involved. And we always talk about, you know, the need for young farmers and definitely the need for young butchers and definitely the need for more processing plants in general. I mean, infrastructure is so important. I mean, what have you found to be like one of the biggest challenges for creating more of this infrastructure talking to these butchers?
Well, the leitmotif of these conversations with farmers and ranchers is we need more slaughterhouses. That's something you'll definitely hear a lot of. And I'm happy to report that the USDA is finally creating standards for mobile slaughter units, which are easier to get started and cheaper to get started. So that's cool. The infrastructure is really expensive, and that's, you know, that's the challenge. It's just like, it's really hard to, if you're raising 30 chickens that, or you want to kill 30 chickens a week to take to the farmer's market to drive them 4 hours or whatever, is like, that's a ridiculous cost.
You couldn't kill all your profit or anything you could make there.
So what are, just to kind of clarify, as far as like expensive infrastructure, what kind of things are, I mean, we're talking about obviously like the physical building. But what else is there? I mean, do you have a sense for what are like the big pieces of equipment? I know, you know, too, from the processing end.
Yeah.
I know, I feel like when I've been in like processing places, it's like the super extra large Mario world where everything's just like the kitchen, the restaurant kitchen, but giant. Do you have a sense for like the cost of some of that type of equipment and like?
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculously expensive. It varies so much on like how much your product you're moving through. Like a really fancy cryovac machine, you know, can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
I mean, that's not to say that everyone has that machine. You know, ours costs much less than that. But it's not just like, first of all, you have to get the animals every week if you're, you know, if you have a local food system, like people want to buy meat every week. In the industrial food system, people usually send their stuff off once a year, a couple times a year, right? So every week you have to drive a truck, and then you have to pay for it to be slaughtered. And then if you want to keep your offal, usually, or in the heads and stuff, usually you have to pay extra for that. then you have to get it from there to a place where it gets butchered. And if you're going to resell,
usually those places are different, right?
Yeah, like they're usually different.
The slaughterhouse and the processing house are in a different location.
Yeah, usually they're different. Especially if you need it to be under USDA inspection, which if you're going to resell it, you do. Then it gets butchered, it gets packaged, it gets stored, it gets distributed, it gets labeled. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that stuff, it seems little, but, you know, the thing about meat really is that even though it's expensive when it gets, when you get it at the grocery store, everybody along the way is making pennies. Mm-hmm. And so it's really pushes you to grow, expand, centralize. And that's what's happened to the industrial meat system. And it's very, very hard for people who need to actually get the value back from what it costs to take, to get that animal to you, to really, you know, get back what that costs them is, well, it's a lot of money.
So in your travels across the U.S. and visiting different kind of retail butcher outlets or restaurants, I mean, did you notice as far as price-wise, like, was that a struggle for restaurants? Was that a struggle for retail shops? Were they having trouble kind of commanding a fair price for their goods? Or, I mean, how does that whole marketing and merchandising factor work into the butchering profession?
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, I think the reason that these kinds of things have really taken off in the Bay Area and in New York is because there's just more people. So that tiny percentage of people that's really values food and has the money to spend on that stuff is just more people. Mm-hmm. So, but people value it all over the country and are interested in it. And I think buying whole animals is really the thing that's kind of made it work in restaurants. And
yeah, you have a section of that in your book too, mm-hmm. right? I mean, is it buying whole animals for like individuals? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a meat CSA in California, and there's lots of them around the country. And I really encourage that for people. If only just to go and meet a farmer and see all the steps that I just described and go through them. It's really, you know, and you can just find a butcher and they'll help you go through it. It's not like you have to be carting animals all over the county. Like, it's not that complicated, but it's really fun to know what the pieces of meat are and to have great meat in your freezer all the time and to meet the person who raised it. Like, every time you pull out, you know, a roast or whatever from your freezer, you have a story to tell.
Totally. Changes the whole experience.
Yeah.
It gets everyone like more involved and excited about it, definitely.
Totally. And it's cheaper.
I have a friend whose mom, you know, they bought a whole pig and then every time they pulled the roast out, it was like, okay, a little more Bob tonight.
Yeah.
And I will say that Marisa's book has a wonderful kind of reference section in the back. I thought that was so smart to include. So if your mouth is watering at the, you know, thought of a fridge or a freezer packed with delicious meats, there's definitely a whole section with resources all across the country to source meat, to find butchers. So make sure to check that out.
And there, we wanted to ask earlier, because I know, you know, talking to a lot of chefs, they're always looking for blood. What did that come up in conversation when you're talking to a lot of butchers, like with like people that want to like buy blood or trying to sell blood?
Kind of crazy blood black market.
Yeah.
I have actually a customer in California who makes films, like horror films. Uh-oh. And I store up blood for him. Yeah, there's a grocery store in the book called Buy Right that's a customer of ours, and they get a bucket of blood every week. And
really?
I laugh every single time I place the order. I'm like, bucket of blood for Buy Right.
Blood sausage.
Buy Right is like the most shishy, fancy little grocery store. I mean, it's very cute.
Yeah.
Best ice
cream.
I
never saw the bucket of blood section there. I wonder if it's like the olive oil that you can put in your own quart container. Like,
secret. You have to know to ask for it.
Yeah, definitely.
That, you know, there's different rules in all different parts of the country. Like, I was talking to John at Franny's and he's like, really wants to get tripe. And I guess I'm like, just ask your farmer when they take it to the slaughterhouse to get it. But in New York, it's not, you can't resell it. So he was trying to find a source outside of it. Like in California, we just get it when we get the cows. So all that stuff like blood and offal, there's, you know, different little parochial rules about it around the country.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing too to realize is that you have the USDA inspection, which is a national inspection, but mm-hmm. then things vary from state to mm-hmm. state. And then if you want to sell your food, you know, where it crosses across state lines, mm-hmm. say you run a retail business and people want you to ship, you know, you have those issues too. So lots of kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
And we're excited to come back after the break. We're going to take a few moments and talk a little bit more about Primal Cuts.
Awesome.
just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park, and then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo, then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. Just a perfect day.
Perfect day to talk about Primal Cuts. Indeed. We are back. Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. Heather and Aaron here with Marisa Gujana, author of the new book Primal Cuts, Cooking with America's Best Butchers. You can find this book, I know, on Amazon.com, in most big bookstores. Where can we find it?
It's also at lots of great independent bookstores. I don't know what they are in New York necessarily, but... and it's at Williams-Sonoma's.
So I'm sure we have a website we could check out where to buy this book.
Yeah, primalcuts.net. We'll have all the places. And yeah.
All right. Awesome. Well, we want to talk now. You know, we've been talking about meat and slaughtering and butchering. What about vegetarians? What is a vegetarian? How do you feel about vegetarians?
I hate them. No, I'm just kidding. I was a vegetarian, actually, for a really long time. I grew up as, like, a really condescending Northern California punk rocker, and I was vegan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Straight-edge vegan?
No.
Skateboarder? Straight-edge vegan?
I wasn't boring. I was just a vegetarian.
Sorry, Austin.
No. And I have respect for that choice. I think that everybody's body chemistry is different, and I think that the first thing that you need to do is nourish yourself and the people you love. And I think if you, like, really eat with care and do, you know, what your body tells you is right, then you'll make good choices. I don't eat that much meat now, mostly because every time I leave the house, people want to give me meat. So I know, like, I don't really need to store up at home because there will be protein in the world for me.
I mean, and also I've found that with a lot of my vegetarian friends, you know, if they knew more about where their meat was coming from, how it was produced, who was handling it, just like kind of, you know, what you just... in your book, maybe they wouldn't be vegetarians.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an ethical vegetarian, I think it's worth supporting a local farm. If you would like to eat protein but you just feel bad about it, there are options. There's great options out there, you know.
So, yeah, so speaking of kind of a notable former vegetarian in your book, Josh Applestone of Fleischer's Meat, kind of one of the famous butcher shops in this area.
Sure.
I was surprised to learn when reading through your book that he was actually a vegetarian when they opened the shop.
Yeah.
And one of the things he speaks to in his bio section was the fact that at their shop, they're selling not meat, but they're selling trust.
Mm.
That a customer can kind of walk in the door and know that anything they buy at Josh's shop is quality, is fresh, is accessible. And Heather and I were talking about that a little bit before the show, you know, how you build this image of trust, because I think people feel that way about things that maybe people in this room don't, like McDonald's, for example. You know, you're driving across the country in your Prius, you know, you go into a McDonald's, kind of what to expect.
On I some trust level, that their bathrooms will be clean.
You can trust that their bathroom, yeah, exactly. You know, and that, you know, you're not going to get sick from eating their meat, you know, most likely. And what are kind of the tools? I know you had spoke earlier about the Butcher's Guild, but how do we work at kind of raising the level of trust for small farmers, small businesses? Like, how do we create more of a brand image? I think your book goes a lot to serve, you know, and start some of these conversations. But have you seen anything out in your travels that you found particularly effective, or have any thoughts on?
Well, I think that, I mean, definitely the Butcher's Guild, that's something that we see needs to happen on a national level. And we're hoping that, you know, if someone has a decal in their window that says they're a member of the Butcher's Guild, that will mean something, not just to butchers, but to consumers. But really, it's just transparency. I mean, the industrial food system all happens behind a curtain, happens behind like a sheath of secrecy for good reason. Like, you probably don't want to know what's happening back there. But if you do, you should read CAFO. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, by Dan Imhoff. It's like everything that you want to know about industrial meat. But
CAFO is confined animal feeding operation.
Yeah. So it's like photos and essays, and it's really just disgusting. But I think just answering questions and making yourself very available to answer questions, having a direct relationship with your customers, and the customers knowing that, like, you know where the meat is coming from, you've been to the farm probably, mm-hmm. and you cut it up yourself, and you know where it was slaughtered, and you're willing to talk about it, and you find it enjoyable to talk about, and you can tell them, like, how to cook that meat and all that stuff. Like, that's what it's all about. You know, it's just something that happens organically in every community in its own way, but just honesty and transparency.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, like, after the first time I went, you know, out to Paradise Soccer Meets in Trimble, Missouri, and I watched it, which I'm sure you were there and you visited, and you spoke with Nick and Mario and all of our favorite people, the Phantasmas, but so I, you know, watched them, you know, slaughter a pig, and it like brought tears to my eyes. It was so beautiful, and ever since then, you know, I've been eating head cheese and things that I never would have thought that I would have tried before, mm-hmm. and, you know, the transparency, once you do get a feel for what's out there, mm-hmm. you maybe will appreciate every part of the animal a little bit more when you see how it's done, and it all comes from the same.
Yeah, so I mean, it's probably like a really rational response to not trust hamburger meat or, you know, like ground turkey meat, which was probably like cleaned with some kind of ammonic cleanser or radiated, you know, to kill the bacteria in it. I mean, there's good reason that you shouldn't trust that stuff and that you should know where your food comes from.
Definitely. I mean, did you find that a lot of the people you spoke to are open to having visitors come to where they're working, whether it be a butcher or slaughterhouse?
They had to be to be in the book, really, because mm-hmm. otherwise wouldn't be very much fun for me or the reader. But
so there was no, like, undercover camera situation where you went in and you're like, expose.
No, it wasn't like Channel 6 news or whatever. But I did get turned down, you know, at a lot of places, especially that do slaughter, and had conversations with people who are like, you know, I don't, like, people are really scared about, what's it called? I'm totally blanking on the animal rights.
Oh, PETA.
PETA, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people are really, really freaked out about it. And even some people that are in the book are just, like, warning me, like, they're going to come after you. And, like, I mean, it seemed irrational to me, but some of the stuff they've said to people or done to people. And even the plant that we own, it used to just be lamb and veal. And in the 80s, you know, in California, there was a huge public awareness campaign about the way that veal was treated and lambs, and they how young lambs were. And the place just got completely attacked. Like, the gate got torn down and they threw red paint everywhere. And I mean, it was like, so.
I'm sorry. What is the name of your plant anyway?
Sonoma Direct.
Sonoma Direct. Sonoma Direct. Mm-hmm. It's no.
Yeah, I think those are definitely issues that I feel like I've run into in New York State, and it speaks to the transparency that you were talking about earlier, is how do we create a safe space for producers to talk about kind of the realities of what it takes to produce food. Mm-hmm. And I think you're constantly kind of running up against things that are now, I think, normal to us. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure over the course of, like, your travels, that there's something changed in you, or things that were kind of weird to you before are now totally normal. I know I spent the last year working up on a pig farm, and so, like, it was normal to me to go and, like, pull chickens and, and, you know, do all this stuff. And I had friends come up and visit, and they were, like, blown away. I mean, has anything like that happened to you where you're like, this is totally normal, and then you're in, like, a new crowd, and you're like, people are freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, and I've been in the meat business too, so, like, I have a very high shock threshold for stuff. But actually, I spent a month in the Hudson Valley this fall, and I was going to a writing retreat, and I thought, like, oh, cool, I'm going to get away. I'm going to work on the project totally unrelated. I'm not going to think about meat for, like, a month. And I get there, and, like, two of the artists are really, really, working on projects based around meat and slaughter and livestock. I was like, of course. But one of the artists who's a who's Argentinian was doing a project on where he would buy a live animal and sort of live with it for a couple of days and then slaughter it and serve the food and then and document the whole thing. Makes these beautiful photographs. So everyone was really cool with it when the animal came, and even like through the slaughter, like he went off in the woods and did it and everything. We kept the pelt and all this stuff. But when we actually ate the food and started like drinking wine and sitting around like looking at this carcass, like everyone got really upset and really like moved by it and had to work through it. And then I was like, God, I feel so cold. Like I just you know, like of course this is great. This is like the, you know, it's beautiful. And I didn't have that emotional reaction, but I realized that other people are really shocked by the fact that their animal was a living thing. And they kind of, you just sort of have to go through that process and then come out the other side of it, I guess.
Yeah. And hopefully something good comes out of it.
Yeah.
What were some of like the most exciting things or interesting things that you ate along your trip?
I had a really good pig head stew in Chicago at Motto. Everybody's like weird little family recipe sausages were great. I had a good pig ear tureen in Boston. I mean, just charcuterie galore.
Totally.
I really appreciated the things like for Easter, I had a lamb that the people that I was eating with had actually killed themselves and had like waited to serve. And lamb on Easter is just like really beautiful and symbolic. And all the things that I ate at people's kitchen tables were really like the most special.
Yeah, I'm sure it had to do with like conversation as well.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask about, like, your book tour and, like, who helped you set this up? I mean, this isn't, like, you sitting at a bookstore signing books. This is, like, you know, what we're talking about with these chefs who are doing things to, like, teach people. I mean, you know, what you got going on. There's sausage demos and, you know, sustainable meat, like, classes. Tell us a little bit about this tour and what's upcoming now that we're pretty much halfway through it.
Yeah. My publisher, Welcome Books, is really great and super supportive of the book. And it seems sort of weird to just sit in a bookshop and sign books, like, become boring. And also, I mean, there's this amazing network of people who are in the book, and so, and they're excited about being in the book too, I hope. And so it's fun to go back around and revisit people and celebrate with them. Like, I wrote this book and you're in this book. And
like, it really happened.
Yeah.
It really happened, guys. Yeah. I have it.
Tangible.
So there's lots of cool things. Like, tonight I'm going to be at Public Restaurant in, on Elizabeth Street, and, we're having a dinner in the Monday room there. And, tomorrow night I'll be at the Meat Hook doing a panel with Tom Mylan, and, the editor of Diner Journal is moderating. Nice. And then a couple Williams Sonoma events at noon, tomorrow and Saturday. And awesome. I'll be at Fleischer's. It'll be really fun. He's doing a whole day of like going to the farm and slaughter and butchering, and then we're gonna have a dinner
awesome
in the evening. Yeah.
When is that?
That's on Sunday.
That sounds pretty fun. And then you go to Indiana, Colorado. Wow. You're going back to California, Texas.
Yeah.
Oregon.
It's gonna be pretty exciting. A lot of the events are the butchers on their own. But it's cool. I mean, there's been an opportunity to have a lot of really great discussions like the one that we're having right now that aren't just like, you wrote a book, here's a 5-minute spiel. It's like, let's talk about what's happening in your community and how you can help. Like, it feels like just getting people interested in their food is
yeah. So on that note, what's next for you? What's the I mean, are you going to delve deeply into root vegetables, or you kind of like try and, you know, hit the other end of the spectrum, or what's on the agenda after, you know, taking some time, of course, to bask in the glory?
I'm really interested in getting the Butcher's Guild off the ground, and then actually next month I start traveling again for my next book, which is Also with Welcome Books about staff meals in restaurants.
Oh, cool. Family time.
Family meal, yeah. So I'm really excited. I worked in restaurants for many years, so I'm excited to just like delve into restaurant culture and just hang out with them after hours and be good.
Definitely. That sounds like an awesome time.
Yeah.
Have you already decided on like what restaurants you're going to be talking to or working with?
I've got about half of them, but I'm still open to suggestions if anyone wants to.
How do we get in touch with you?
You could email me at Twitter at Googe, G-U-G-G.
Awesome. Yeah. If you guys want to be part of Marissa's next book or just ask her a question and just all that good stuff, check out butchersguild.org and then
primalcuts.net.
Awesome.
Or come out to Public tonight. Thank you so much for coming. And it was really great talking to you. And I really look forward to kind of following your work over the next couple of years and checking out some of the great recipes in your book.
Yeah, everyone, go check it out. It's beautiful, easy to read, and really well put together. So thanks, Marissa, for coming in.
Thank you.
See y'all. Listen to y'all next week on the Farm Report, Heritage Radio Network. Thanks, Jack and Nat.
You've been listening to the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. Coming up next, Greenhorn Radio is back. Severin will be live on the air at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember to vote for Roberta's for New York City Restaurant of the Year on Eater. So go to www.ny.eater.com and vote for Roberta's. And as always, follow us on Twitter for news, updates, and giveaways at HRN Updates. Thanks for listening.